Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that's, of course, the late, great Michael Jackson singing from the Thriller album. That's Wanna Be Starting Something by he did on this day when it hit number one in 1983. Every time I hear that voice, I think how much the world lost in that talent that existed for us all. On our way to this conversation, I'll remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, where you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. Or at SteinerShow.org, the Maryland State Education Association's banner. We're about to tackle a subject that really hit the fans the other night at the Baltimore School Board with a hearing that would allow Baltimore City school police officers to carry guns in schools while patrolling schools. It's both an emotional issue on both sides of the this particular issue. It's an issue that also has some clarity on both sides in terms of why this should or should not happen. So we thought important to wrestle with this because we had a program on this just a few weeks back when we looked at this in a more national sense because of Delegate Cluster's bill to allow saying that all SROs should be able to carry guns inside schools across the state. That bill may not be going anywhere in the Senate or the House, but it may. And this particular issue is not to be decided by the Baltimore City School Board, though they weighed in and are part of this. It is to be decided by the state legislature, and it's a bill being introduced by State Senator Joan Carter Conway and Delegate Anderson, of course, who's chair of the Kurt Anderson's chair of the Baltimore City delegation in their respective houses, are introducing this bill. So we want you to weigh in. We already have phone calls coming in, and Amy, we're going to come to your call in just a moment at 410-319-8888. You can write emails to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can also tweet me at Mark Steiner. We'll be checking to see if you're tweeting, especially if you're in schools listening, and you're not supposed to be. You can tweet. We won't see who you are. 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts about this. And we are joined here in studio by Sergeant Clyde Boatwright, who testified the other night at the school board. He is president of the Baltimore School Police Union for Lodge 5. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you.
Dunbar Brooks is in the house here. He's now school supervisor.
Donovan Brooks.
I want to call you Dunbar.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, man. Donovan Brooks is here, who's now a supervisor for the Baltimore City School Police and joins us in studio. Good to see him not in this capacity here. And Race Akbar joins us. Juvenile Justice Director for the Advocates for Children and Youth. Race, welcome to have you here.
Thank you, Mark.
And Dr. Kimberly Moffitt joins us, Assistant Associate Professor of American Studies, University of Maryland, Baltimore County, co-editor of this book, Black Berries and Red Bones, A Critical Articulation of Black Hair, Body Politics, and Africana Communities. But she's also the mother of children in the school system and is a founding member of a charter school here in Baltimore City.
Yeah.
Which is more of her capacity here today, those two things. And you all can join us, as I said, 410-319-8888. So this is a really, given the explosive nature of the relationship between the police and minority communities in this country, the numbers of young people who are killed by police every 28 hours in America, there is a tension there naturally around that. And so the question becomes, so that's this time it exacerbates the question, no matter what the need or non-need for this is. So let me turn to you, Clyde Boatwright, Sergeant Boatwright,
to join into this first.
And what were you saying? Why do police need to carry guns in schools every day?
Well, in Baltimore City, unfortunately, we have a history of having a high number of violent crimes that occur in our city and in the immediate vicinity of our schools. We have 141 school police officers patrolling the 180 buildings operated by the Baltimore City school system. Those officers' primary focus is to provide a safe and secure learning environment for students, staff, and visitors. Sadly, far too long we've seen incidents of mass shootings. We've seen incidents of crime and violence here in Baltimore, and we just need to have every tool available and every resource available to ensure the safety of our students.
And Ray Sockwell, let me let you jump into this.
Well, the bill that has been introduced in the House and the Senate, actually, there are already, as Sergeant Berger points out, there are already, under current law, Baltimore City School police officers assigned to some schools. But the bill would get rid of the assigning part. It'd be any Baltimore City school officer can go to any school building, whether it says the language of the proposed bill says used for an educational purpose. So that's all Baltimore City schools, whether an officer is assigned to that school or not. And the procedure, as I understand it, is under current law, is that the officers have to put the guns away in the locker while they're there. This bill would allow them to just carry it without having to put it away. So I'm wondering why, Sergeant Boatwright talked about the need for safety. Well, there's the evidence that school officers prevent mass shootings is very inconclusive. It's thin. There hasn't been a lot of research done on it. What research there is suggests that school officers are not terribly effective at stopping mass shootings. So the other concern, the concern about controlling crime in general, just the violent crimes in schools, even here, I mean, there are significant other consequences to having schools and police, significant negative consequences on the school environment, which are not warranted. Incurring those negative consequences are not warranted by the fairly thin evidence that school officers actually are effective at controlling violence in schools. The research doesn't support that.
So, I mean, so I'll let you respond, though, before we turn to Dr. Kimberly Moffitt here. I mean, because I think that there are a number of issues you raised, but right now the police officers in the Baltimore City Police, City School Police, have guns, right?
Yes.
But you don't carry them in the schools?
We do.
Is that correct?
We do. When you're assigned to multiple schools or you're assigned to mobile patrol, and I wanted to correct something that Mr. Akbar said. When we respond to a school that we're not permanently assigned to, we don't have to go to a location and secure the gun because the responding officers are in the patrol division and or their supervisors who have their weapons on them at 24 hours a day. So I wanted to correct that because you would have people looking for the secure location inside of an elementary school that does not exist.
Here's the question that I think that it raises, though. If Baltimore City school police officers already have guns and carry guns, especially when they're on patrol.
Correct.
Right? So the police officer who may be assigned to an elementary school in the city or your school coming up, this charter school, what's the name of the charter school again?
Baltimore Collegiate School.
Baltimore Collegiate School. And so why would that officer in the school that's being formed need to have a gun in that school all the time they're there? Kimberly, let me start with you.
I'm not sure I know the answer to that question because I'm very conflicted by this. I actually attended the forum at North Avenue on Tuesday night to hear Sergeant Boatwright present, as well as several other voices from parents. And I remain, even 2 days later, still very conflicted by what I should take away from this, and which is why I was ecstatic to know that it was a topic that you wanted to continue talking about on air, because I find myself thinking from the perspective of the school officers and the educators in those buildings that I respect, saying to me that this is something that's necessary, that they believe is needed in their schools, and I trust that. But I also speak as a parent of two children in these buildings and wonder where does the slippery slope take us and what might happen as a result of. And I guess one of my biggest concerns, in all honesty, again, coming from the perspective of a parent, is what happens when, because of some of the energy around how we perceive our children, in particular black boys, what happens when the first victim of such a shooting happens to be one of our students and not necessarily an intruder into the school.
So let me ask you about this. There's a tweet that just came in from Seth, who tweeted in, before we go to Amy and Melissa, our first two callers up, we're going to come right to you before the break, I promise. But Seth just tweeted in, "As much as I feel the police are here to protect us, I feel just as strongly about them oppressing us. Weapons will only reinforce that." So, I mean, let's do talk about this for a minute. I mean, go ahead, Donna. What were we going to say?
Okay. That statement is problematic in and of itself.
Why is it problematic?
Weapons will oppress us. First of all, Dr. Moffitt, with all due respect, you are currently a professor at UMBC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in 1974, UMBC established their public safety department.
Yes.
They were unarmed security officers. However, in 2015, UMBC has a fully sworn, fully commissioned, and fully armed police department
right.
on the campus where you go to work
That's
every
right.
day and where you teach students. I don't believe that those officers are there to oppress the students of UMBC. I mean, if you look at their website, they even tell you that they have the state-of-the-art equipment, training, and technology. I think herein lies part of the problem for me. Is it okay to go on a campus and protect 14,000 tuition-paying students with armed police officers on a nice 500-acre parcel of land, but 88,000 students who exist in 180 schools, and those schools sit in areas that are statistically proven to be areas that are problematic and dangerous? We want to disarm those officers, and those students are denied the same protection that your students are. And lastly, I want to say this. So do we take an 18-year-old student who's in high school right now, who graduates in June, and he has to be educated in an environment where there's a police officer, but that police officer is disarmed. But then he's accepted into UMBC, and 2 months later in August, he now gets to sit in a class at 18 on a campus where the police officers are armed. But, so he does get that level of protection.
Let me say,
I mean, because I think it's very different. I mean, we've got the data that shows what happens at colleges in terms of these broad open campuses where people have access to students in very readily available and easy ways that has to be managed in such a way, which I don't feel like happens in a contained space like a public school. So I hear your point, and again, that's why I started with the statement of how conflicted I am by this idea. But I'm thinking of it again from the perspective of a parent who has young children in buildings, and it does make a difference to me what my children have access to between the ages of 5 and 18 in a public school building versus what they have access to as a young adult in a college setting.
Well, I want to comment.
Let me Race come back in. I want to open the phones as well.
Sure.
And I'll come right back to you, Sergeant.
Sure.
Race, let you chime in here, and then I want to go right to the phones and bring the Sergeant back in.
Well, the effect on the education of middle school and high school students of the presence of police officers in their schools is significantly different than the effect on the education of college students. There is a large body of research that has been done on what happens to the rates of dropping out of school, students, and we're talking young students. I mean, the Sergeant Boatwright said 18. I mean, this happens in middle schools as well, where students are 13, 14 years old. Hostile encounters with police in schools doubles. A school-based arrest doubles their likelihood of dropping out of school. A court appearance quadruples likelihood of a student dropping out of school. This is significantly different than the kind of interactions that college students have with police or guards at their university campus. We can't really compare a 13, 14-year-old to a 20 or 21-year-old.
So let me go to the phones here, and I'll let you both come back to that, all right? I just want to hear, I promise this, mm-hmm. we at least get to a couple of calls in. Not a couple, a lot of calls. There's people calling in at 410-319-8888. And Amy, you've been holding on the longest. Amy, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thanks, Mark, for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
The first thing that I want to say is what's happening right here on your show hasn't happened yet. This is a dialogue that needs to take place. And before this bill gets introduced, a dialogue that includes parents, that includes students whom this is going to most directly affect, and includes teachers and the administration. And that's not something that's happened. And that's one of the things that parents like myself are objecting to, the complete lack of transparency with regards to making such a drastic change to the role of our school police. I personally am completely against having guns in schools, but I know that there are people of different opinions, specifically like Dr. Moffitt, who want to have this dialogue and want to understand more about why this is necessary. And when, you know, Sergeant, Boatwright, is that
Sergeant Clyde Boatwright, yes.
Yeah. When he speaks about this, I have no doubt that he sincerely believes that for his officers to be carrying weapons is absolutely necessary because they're police officers and that's what they're trained to do. But what I'm concerned about is that we're policing our children instead of helping our children, instead of getting to the root of the behaviors, we're policing them. And I personally think that that's not the right path to take.
Sergeant.
But with regards to the transparency issue, this bill was introduced without any input from parents, and then which was apparently it was introduced on behalf of the administration, and when our delegation, our city delegation, asked the school board to solicit the feedback, they gave parents less than a week's notice that they would have a hearing, and then they had it at 5 p.m. on a Tuesday evening, which is very difficult for a lot of working parents to show up to with such short notice. And so I started the petition to give parents a voice, you know. And right now we have over 1,400 signatures that are asking the administration to withdraw this bill and have a transparent process in which we can be a part of that dialogue and learn about what's happening in schools as to why this is necessary.
Amy, I wish we had met you before this. We'd have had you on the show today. I'm serious, because I think you're very articulate in what you're describing in terms of what you think was left out. And so some people do think this is kind of moving too fast, too far. You want to respond to what she was saying, Sergeant?
Yeah, I do. I wanted to respond to Ms. Amy, and I wanted to respond to Dr. Moffitt. There's an organization called Everytown USA that have conducted a study as it relates to school shootings since the Newtown Massacre in Sandy Hook. Since December 15th of 2012, there has been 108 school shooting incidents in this country. The last one was three people shot at Bethune-Cookman on Monday evening. It's an epidemic.
Which is a college.
Which is a college.
Not a high school.
Not a high school. So let me break down some of the data.
Frederick High School was Frederick.
Yeah, and the one closest to Maryland was Frederick High School.
Mm-hmm.
So let me break down some of the data. In the analysis, it states that there were 49 gun shooting incidents in K-12 schools.
In
the country since 2012. Right. And then there's been 45 collegiate or university school shootings. And not only, if you go to Everytown, it has a list. It has a list of the number of people that were injured, whether people were killed, whether the suspect came in and committed mass suicide. We're now living in a society where the Department of Homeland Security is telling United States citizens to be careful and be vigilant while you go to the mall. Schools have always have been soft targets. And my concern is we're now giving the person that's planning the next terrorist attack 180 buildings to draw up a plan against.
Let me challenge this for just one minute. And before we go right back to the phone, we have a lot of people calling in. Really, Tracy and Melissa, we have to get to these calls, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, to get you people in because it's really an important issue. But let me just push back a little bit as part of my job here. Those are true, but 49 shootings, killings in
Shooting incidents, correct.
How many schools are in America?
How many colleges are?
But how many schools are in America? How many thousands of public schools are in the United States of America? And so the question is, if you have armed city school police officers on patrol, why is that not adequate for any emergency situation? What would one armed police officer at the Baltimore School for the Arts do if it took place two buildings down and not where the officer was?
Because by the time that a person picks up the phone and dial 911 and receive the call and dispatch receives the call and dispatch it out to officers, that person is still shooting. In each second that goes by, that means another life. That officer assigned to the Baltimore School of the Arts can run up the steps or go down to the basement, wherever the threat is, and immediately neutralize the threat without going to any other location to retrieve a gun.
But you can also neutralize that threat, not necessarily with a weapon. I mean, certainly not a gun. I mean, there are other means in which of how you neutralize that. A situation that's not necessary for a gun.
No, statistics prove that you cannot bring any other weapon to a gunfight. you'll lose. If you bring a taser to a gunfight, you know, that's a losing situation.
Before we go to Donovan, let me go to Race, and then the phone's going back to Donovan, okay? Race?
I'll make sure. Sergeant Boatwright is correct that there have been a number of school shootings, too many school shootings, even since Newtown. The body of research that I want to reference is the research that questions whether the presence of armed police officers are effective in stopping those shootings. And there actually is a significant amount of research on this, which I'll be happy to provide citations for, that suggests that the presence of school officers with weapons are not effective in stopping either mass shootings or just general violent crime, which has already seen significant decline in schools across the country, both in schools that have officers and schools that don't. So the presence of officers has a marginal effect on safety, but a considerable effect on educational outcomes. Is what I really want to stress.
And one of the things, and I appreciate Race's data that he's presenting, because, of course, data does mean something to me. But I want to make this a micro issue in terms of where we are in Baltimore City. And for me, part of my conflict is very much about how we know police forces are engaging in our communities or not, and the tension that exists with that. Coming into our school buildings, does it exacerbate an issue or does it actually quell it and make a situation better? And what I say is that we need to be working on ways in which our communities are working together so that we do see our police officers, our school officers in the school as police Mr. Friendly. That's, and not absolutely. In this antagonistic way in which we feel like we have to be on the defense. Cool. That's the kind of work that I want to see happening in our schools. But what I see is this interest in wanting to weaponize everything to just hopefully squash any level of violence that happens in schools. And I'm saying, well, where is the conversation where we can work together instead of believing the only way to address these issues is to make sure I have a gun to be able to point to you if you do something?
So I believe one of the things that has to be said to your point, Dr. Moffitt, is that that is not the only concern. When it comes to police officers in the Baltimore City.
And that's fair.
Our officers are coached. Listen, my son went to 3 high school football championships and won them under the tutelage of Coach Lawrence Smith at Dunbar High School, who also happened to be the school police officer that he saw every day when he went to school, okay? And that officer had a relationship with the students in that school. He mentored those students, to include my son. We have officers who run mentoring programs inside of their schools. So we do present the model that you are speaking of.
Some do.
Yes. Like, realistic.
Listen, we're going to be realistic. Most of our school police officers, in fact, 99% of our police officers in the Baltimore City Public School police system, let me tell you, we are not unlike any other organization. Every organization, whether it be policing or any other organization, will experience its challenges. I think the question is, how do you respond when there are challenges? How do you correct deficiencies? That's what we do at the Baltimore City Public School Police System. So I want to say, to Ray's point, very quickly.
Quick, I do want to get the phones here. I need to control this a little bit here.
Ray, you worked in the D.C. Public School System with some middle school students, Ray. While you were there, you had to have noticed that the D.C. middle schools and high schools are manned by armed police officers. And my question to you is this a passion that you have developed since the concern has arisen with Baltimore City Public School Police, or is this something that you also openly expressed while you worked with the students in the D.C. public school system who have armed police officers patrolling their buildings?
May I respond to that, Mark?
Yeah, go ahead, Race.
I was a student when I worked in D.C. public schools, and yes, I did have some concerns about the presence of armed guards there as well. I will say, however, that with other jurisdictions that have armed guards in schools, not that I approve, but they have more transparency. They have memorandums of understanding to report data. They have engagement with, or they ought to anyway, they ought to, and some do and some don't. So there's the caller earlier referenced the manner in which this bill was being pushed through with so little input from the community. I'm not in favor of having guns in schools either by police or by anybody else. But if you're going to do it, can we at least take our time to fully explore this and get everyone's voices heard? So I take the caller's point very clearly. I heard a lot of that from parents at both the school board hearing and the delegation hearing in Annapolis earlier.
So let me go with the phones here, and we have time for some calls before we go to break. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Tracy. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Tracy. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks
and
for
I want to thank everyone who's talking about this subject. I just happened to be on Facebook Tuesday and saw a post from a news agency that in an hour there was going to be a meeting at North Avenue to discuss whether or not police officers should have guns in school. So, first of all, that was the first that I ever heard having a child in Baltimore City Public Schools and working closely with the schools. So I definitely agree with the panel and with the parents who called in and said there was no transparency. There
right.
was no awareness. There was no notification whatsoever that this was even a topic of discussion. And secondly, I have a question for the police officers who I respect, and I really appreciate you being there. I have one child in public school and one in private school. And so I do see the stark contrast in those environments. But I have a nephew who is from Baltimore City, raised in a project, one of the most dangerous projects in Baltimore City, who was lead paint poisoned, ADHD, had learning difficulties, basically illiterate, being pushed through the system, and has tantrums. He's a boy, a teenage boy, who has tantrums as if he is a child, and those tantrums can become violent. So you, city officer, now in this school, now armed with a child with all of these issues, as a lot of city school children have, who's throwing a violent tantrum, what is your reaction now that you have a gun? Go.
This is Donovan Brooks, supervisor of Baltimore City Public School.
We have to take a break here. We can come back with this break. And I also want to talk, we can come back. I mean, we saw the incident happen in October where there's female city police officers, school officers, were beating children who were 13 years old. We still don't know what happened to those officers. Were they ever disciplined? Anything ever happened to them? Those kids were expelled.
That's an open investigation at this point.
Right. But I'm saying that there's a lot of issues here why people have issues that are raised. We'll come right back, let you respond. And we are going to come back to all of our callers, Dickens, DeLeon, Melissa, Andre. My commitment to you is you're getting on this program. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Is bigger than the government. This one is the hill of hip.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and you're hearing right now the great Fats Domino. That's I'm Gonna Be a Wheel Someday. He was born on this day in 1928. Happy birthday, Fats. He is still with us and still cooking. So we're cooking here the Mark Steiner Show today. Remind you on the way to this conversation, if you want to know how to repair your credit, build a budget, or buy a home, learn all that and more at the Financial Fitness Day, which is happening this Saturday, February the 28th, at the Transfiguration Catholic Community. More information at 410-685-5044. It's worth going. It can save you a lot of money, and you can learn a great deal. 410-685-5044. We are here with two men from the Baltimore City School Police Department, Sergeant Clyde Boatwright, who is president of their union, Donovan Brooks, who is the school supervisor for the City School Police, Race Akbar, who is Juvenile Justice Director for Advocates for Children and Youth, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, an Associate Professor in American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, who is also a parent of a child in the schools and also is one of the founding members of a new charter school opening here in Baltimore City in September. 410-319-8888. Go ahead, Donovan, then I'm going to go right to the phones for three calls in a row here.
Yeah, so I am a certified Maryland law enforcement instructor. And one of the blocks of instruction that I teach to police officers all over the state of Maryland is engaging individuals who are experiencing a mental health crisis. And I teach that to school police officers at in-service training. Right here on the campus of Morgan State University, I've also taught their officers during in-service training. So, yes, we do train the officers on how to respond to those types of situations. I am the instructor who provides that block of instruction, who has diligently done the research, so that when we do have these type of encounters, they don't result in this person. Because what happens is a person who's having a mental health crisis, right, doesn't need jail. They need medical intervention. Okay? And so this is what we express to officers. This is how our officers are trained. If we're able to de-escalate, then that's the primary objective. Safety right, is another primary objective, so that this individual is not, does not become a danger to themselves or to others. But we must act, even as police officers, to make sure that safety is provided, while at the same time protecting not only the rights, but protecting the safety of the person experiencing a mental health crisis.
Let me open the phone to you, unless everybody's dying to jump in. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Melissa, line one.
Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
I'm one of the parents involved in the petition to withdraw the bill, because as a colleague of mine, Amy, stated earlier, we really haven't been involved in this process. It was a very hastily scheduled school board meeting, very little notice. I was at the hearing in Annapolis, where several of the city delegates pleaded with the school board to please make the hearing on a Saturday in the afternoon when parents could more easily attend. That was not done, and again, less than 1 week's notice. But really, to bring it to a micro level, as one of your guests said earlier, I don't know if you're familiar with some of the statistics about school arrest in Baltimore, but according to the Department of Juvenile Services, in 2013, there were 688 school arrests or referrals.
Right. I read that too.
620 of those, that's 90%, were in Baltimore. I can't think of a reason why we have such disproportionate numbers in this city. Are kids really more dangerous? And when we think about the statistics behind school arrests, and we think about the danger to students regarding their health and academic outcomes, as Race was stating earlier, they're less likely to graduate, they're more likely to be involved with criminal activity down the line, they're more likely to have difficulty with seat time and staying in school. What is more dangerous for our students, to have armed officers, or for them to be without armed officers? To me, the data is very clear that it's definitely much more dangerous to have school police who are likely to put these kids on a school-to-prison pipeline path. This is not what I want as a parent of city school children. I have one daughter. She's 7. She's a first grader, and no one can tell me, and I have repeatedly asked the school board and the school police, how officers are trained. Are they competency-based or seat time-based training? How are they disciplined and evaluated, and whether or not parents have a say in that discipline and evaluation process? Just as I know that my daughter's teacher is licensed in the classroom, I want to know how these officers are trained and at what capacity before they are in a classroom with my small child. As a parent, I feel entitled to that information, and neither the police nor the school board has been able to answer any questions on a consistent basis. Indeed, in the Baltimore Sun article, they said they're already carrying weapons into school in contravention of the law as it stands today. And yet here they are asking for my trust. What have they done to deserve it?
Melissa, thank you for that call. I do want to get to these other calls, but I'd let you respond, Sergeant.
Yes, and I want to challenge Ms. Melissa's data. When she suggested there was 600 incidents. I'm reading from a document produced on the January 23rd, 2015 by Baltimore City Police Department as the end of the year juvenile arrest record. In Baltimore City School Police were responsible for 414 arrests in 2014. That is down from the 512 arrests in 2013. All right, we have a significant decline in arresting juveniles because we've taken a holistic approach to diverting these situations to other programs. And arrest is not and when you combine juvenile referrals and these physical arrest numbers, then you get such a inflated number. But a referral is for a juvenile to get intervention and not go to jail. I have never in my professional career sent a juvenile to jail to do time. We don't do that. It's about intervention and programs.
But when the last program we did on this, there were clear stats given out. I don't have them right in front of me now, but I'll pull them up in a moment, where the 90% of all the arrests for students in the state of Maryland were in our city schools, not in anybody else's schools.
Well, here's the data. All right. And
Race, what were you going to say?
I was just going to, those numbers come from the Department of Juvenile Services. Among their mandates is to track arrest records. And the 688 statewide school-based arrests that DJS reported, 620, were in Baltimore City schools. That's not a number that I or the callers have pulled out of the air. That's from the Department of Juvenile Services.
Well, I challenge those numbers. I have a document in front of me that's an official document. And I'm reading from the Baltimore City Police Department, who's charged with the responsibility of reporting this to the FBI. under UCR.
But it's clear those arrests took place. I mean, they wouldn't have those numbers didn't come out of thin air. I don't know what the city police have also been challenged before about their numbers.
What I'll say is this: when you combine a referral to a juvenile diversion program with a physical arrest, when you combine the two, you'll get that inflated number.
And the question might, this is such a deep conversation, mm-hmm. because sure. The question is even why students should even be in a juvenile diversion program. I mean, you know, is that even necessary most of the time?
Well,
in our world, let me go to the phones here. Come right back to
sure.
you, the 404-390-319-8888. A lot of people are dying to get in this conversation. I'm going to take them in order that you called. Dickens, you're on the air. Dickens, you're on the air. Are you with us?
Hello?
Dickens, you have to turn down your radio. You're on the air.
Okay. Hey, can you hear me now?
I got you, man. Got you.
I was a part of the statistic of being able, about the students being shot with, getting across with security guard and police officers. Police supposed to have guns. Security is the threat level. You got security within the school system, which is what they call resource officers now in Baltimore City school system, right? Hello?
Go ahead, finish.
Okay, they got this resource officers. Resource officers are dressed up to the level where when the police have to come in with guns. If someone's on that school ground with guns, you need someone there with a gun. You can't have somebody go out there and talk about, oh, come on, give me your gun, sit down. They're going to get shot. The same way students have been shot at Northern on the premises. I was a student there. We're losing friends here in Baltimore, because I'm a Baltimorean. So you have to address the threat as accordingly. You got security guards to address the children in the classroom. You don't have to have police in the classroom with guns. That's nonsense. That's just a quest to try to get us to subdue with the guns, and so they can corrupt the schools more than what they're already doing. They're already not taking care of the schools. You know what? They setting us up for failure.
Okay, Dickens, let me get to another caller, because I'll make sure everybody has a chance to talk and we have enough time, and come right back to our guests here. Andre, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Andre.
Like the other caller said, I'm a UCB student in Baltimore City Public Schools. I went to Maryland, like, regularly in 2005, and it was always a sense of security knowing that we had two school police officers on our premises. It's quite frankly, the schools are in some rough neighborhoods. One of my closest friends got shot walking from school in Tivoli. Mm-hmm. Not saying that, I used to work with the school police as a school police hall monitor. I worked at Lombard Middle School, and it was two school police hall monitors and two sworn officers. And some of the stuff that goes on inside of the schools are ridiculous. And what caused me to understand is that when the school police officers are there, they're not there policing the students. They're there to protect the students. The school police knows those students better than Baltimore City. School police can handle situations when it comes to the juveniles better than Baltimore City. I am also a Baltimore City police officer, and I worked in the South Side. I worked in the Southern District in Cherry Hill. And there's been countless times where stuff happens in the community and it goes to the school. And I could reach out to the school police officers and de-escalate the situation without making an arrest. Not saying that, the school police also are first units on the scene sometimes when stuff happens right outside the schools in these neighborhoods, such as robberies, shootings, you know, distress calls for city officers. So people need to understand that it's just not the police being armed and not, you know, walking, it's not the gun thing. You know, those school police officers are passionate. They love those kids, and they can actually deal with the school students better than Baltimore City Police. That's just my personal opinion.
All right.
For both of the two. That's just how I feel. So we need to just be mindful that we don't want to be proactive. That's the problem. We always proactive. Let's try not to wait for something to happen. If something happened in one of those schools, and it was your student or your family, how would you feel, you know, that school police officers have to run to the basement to get his gun?
Andre, I appreciate the call. Great deal. And let's get one more call and come right back to our panel so we can talk about what we just heard. DeLeon, you're on the air. Hi, DeLeon. You're on the air, DeLeon.
DeLeon is the name. Okay. Mark, thank you. I will make this very quick. I've heard a lot of words this morning, meaningless words. I am totally against having anyone in a school area. Okay? because it puts on that child's mind, here is a weapon, and why children are very, you do that and you take away from what they are there for. So I'm totally against a weapon in a school. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And let's go back to our panels here, and we'll come back to the phones as well. Ralph wrote in earlier, my brother, now retired, was a school police officer for decades. He took the job seriously and handled himself and school matters well, as so many of these school officers do. They are police officers and not security guards. But that being said, our children are in the schools, and anything can and does happen in the middle and high schools where most school police officers are assigned. I am very strongly opposed to guns in schools being carried by anyone. Guns and kids don't mix. The current practice and policy, backed by state law, of no guns carried by officers in Baltimore City Public Schools make us better, not disadvantaged, as some would have us think. No guns in schools for anyone. And if you ask me, the fewer guns everywhere, the better. Ralph Moore. So let's kind of jump into this together. So, Kimberly, let me just start off. Well, then start us off.
Because I do, I connect with and it resonates with me of this idea of us policing our children and feeling like that type of presence has to be in our buildings when that's not the focal point of what I want my children to gain in the experience. But again, I'm not in a high school. And so I understand that this is the word that we're hearing from so many school staff members and principals and administrators who are saying that having this would benefit our buildings. And it just seems like, I mean, again, I'm very conflicted over this issue because I appreciate both perspectives. But as a parent, which is what resonates the most with me, is I just don't want this to be an aspect of my children's educational experience. Does that mean that they shouldn't have to be a part of Baltimore City Public Schools? No, because they deserve to have the education that they are entitled to wherever it is. I shouldn't have to be in Howard County to have a good education. I can be here and make it happen. But when we allow so many of the forces that are on the outside to come into our buildings, what are we doing to our children? And how are they then looking upon themselves? And I'm speaking from a perspective of raising brown children, right? In terms of how they then start to think about themselves being policed in this particular way, what might that do to their own psyche as they are growing and developing to think about how others are looking upon them, meaning that they have to constantly be policed?
Right. So I want to talk about an outcome, and the outcome that I want to talk about, because that's a legitimate question as a parent, because I'm also a parent, and the outcome for my four children who have graduated from Baltimore City Public Schools, where they've been police officers, the outcome has been very positive and did not have an adverse or negative impact on their education. We keep talking about policing students, and that's not what the Baltimore City School Police Department does. We protect school grounds, property, and the individuals who operate within inside of those schools. That's what we do. That's our primary job. And in executing those duties, are we charged with the responsibility at times to enforce laws when they have been broken? Can we live in a society where every single thing that happened, Mark, you asked, why do we have diversion programs? We have diversion programs to save the lives of young people, to divert them from crime into a pathway that helps them be productive citizens.
But I also know that as a person who spent a good early part of his career in diversion programs, the diversion programs we have today are a sorry excuse for diversion programs. They are not diversion programs.
Well, then should be the face of change for that.
If
you have that intimate knowledge, Mark, then you have a responsibility to be the face of change for that.
Because that we don't put money into that. We put money into incarceration.
Right.
And police,
we
do not put money into programs that bring children back.
And then we can't say that it's not about policing when, again, so many of the statistics show us that a lot of the arrests that are happening in terms of K-12 are happening in this city. So why does that not look like or feel like policing to those of us who have parents in the school system?
Sergeant, and then we'll go to Rayson back to the phone. Is that cool, Sergeant?
Okay. All right, so the police officers that are assigned to schools are not a part of the discipline process at all. That's an administrative issue.
Right.
And like the police supervisor sitting next to me said, you know, we are part of maintaining a safe environment. That's our sole focus. I mean, I look at a poll that was done 83% of the viewers of WBAL support school police carrying guns. There was a poll done. I mean,
and now, 60, WBAL. Are
right.
You, are you surprised?
Right.
Well, I mean, let me go further.
It's a mostly white conservative audience. Of course, they won't please have guns.
Don't be selective with the data.
Mark, wait a minute. Are you going to impeach? Are you going to impeach every bit of data that we present to you today, Mark?
No, I didn't impeach every data. I was challenging that because I think we have to kind of be clear about what we're looking
because
at.
Because there's been lots of data given, but it seems that you know.
Well, and let me add this: 67% so far. The teacher survey is out. Until Friday, 67% of teachers say that they support school police officers carrying guns. These are the folks. Right. 100 administrators support school police carrying guns. These are the folks, along with our men and women, that are on the ground, that are actually doing the work.
They don't have the luxury of sitting behind a computer and pulling up some numbers and saying, stop this.
Well,
They're on the ground.
But we are talking about those same people who are pulling up the data are individuals who are raising the children that come into your building.
And so are we.
So that's valid. Yeah. No, but I'm just simply saying, but hear that voice as well.
We hear it.
That not only, this is why I'm conflicted, because I hear that 67% means something to me.
Correct.
Because those are the people who are doing this day to day, saying this is what will make me feel more comfortable to do my job. As a parent bringing my children to the school, you also have to hear that voice of what it means that we are allowing our school system, a place that we saw as being so sacred and protective of where we could send our children and they would be okay, and now we are allowing weapons to be a part of that conversation to say this is the only way we can protect you.
Well,
let me do this. Let me just jump in. Grace, I'll let you say something, and then let me just say something quick to Donovan Brooks.
Okay. I've heard from some of the panelists and from callers that the police intend to do good. They're operating in schools with best intentions, that they care about students. I don't doubt any of that. I don't mean to impinge on any motives. They're not acting out of malice. However, the presence of police in schools, particularly armed police, has noticeable effects. And there are two strands of research that we really should keep in mind. One strand analyzes whether or not they're effective in stopping violence, both the mass shooting kind or the more prosaic, ordinary kind of violent crime that can happen from time to time. Largely, the research says that they are not. And the other strand of researches are, does the presence of police in schools have a negative effect on educational outcomes for students? And here, the evidence suggests that they do. So keeping these two things in mind, I don't really see why we should be in such a hurry to arm police in Baltimore City schools, which already have a pretty severe problem. I mean, so many of the school-based arrests happen in Baltimore City. Why are we layering guns on top of an already dire situation?
So let me just say this. First of all, to Donovan, I'll read this a note that came in from a city school police officer and go back to the phones, get a call, and come back to our guests and say to Donovan, it does appear that's what I was doing earlier, because statistics get on my nerves. because sometimes they can come, any side can use statistics and blur, not just saying you're doing that.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying?
Correct.
But I mean, that's.
But all sides were using the mark, but you kind of. You kind of honed in.
Didn't I just
say
everything
that we said?
Didn't I just say
everything
you said? You did. And I thank you.
So Brandon just called in to say. He was a product of the Baltimore City school system. Now he's a Baltimore City school officer. He supports this bill. He said, I'm out in the street now, and lots of dangerous situations have happened right outside of this building. Has had guys pull out knives outside of the building. Need to be able to meet the threat to go one level above. Has good relationship with his children. His male students say they want the police officers after seeing his example.
Let me give you a quick story. It's very short.
We have a few minutes, so they do have to get to the phones here.
Okay. In 1993, my father called a childhood friend of his and said, I need you to talk to my son. He's about to be lost. And that person was an officer named Kevin Williams, assigned to Walbrook High School back then. In 2002, Kevin Williams became my partner and field training officer when I came to school police. All right. We had students that we interacted with. I had a gentleman by the name of Tyrell Thomas who inboxed me in early February 3 years ago and said, hey, Boatwright, what is the process of becoming a police officer? And I gave him the website and I said, hey, this is what you do. 8 months later, I received the inbox. He said, Boatwright, what are you doing? I need you to come to my graduation. Because you know what? I was an influence on him. just like Kevin Williams was an influence on me.
Nobody can deny
and it
that.
Happens every day.
Yeah. Let me go to the phones here. And these two tweets just came in. Melissa just tweeted in, parents in capital letters are very much on the ground and have been asked for input. And Housing Policy Watch tweeted in, agreed, I don't think anyone's asked the parents at my son's schools. I haven't been asked, and that's for sure. This is the biggest part of this problem. Whether or not you think police officers should have guns or police officers should not have guns, the way we run things in this town is to have these hearings and times when parents cannot attend or be part of the situation.
Or even more so, to be...
That's the problem.
Or to be more patriarchal and paternal in terms of imposing policies upon us as though we need to be taken care of instead of allowing us to participate in the process and have a say over what we want to see happen.
Let the decision happen, but let it be a much more open process. I think that's always been the case here. It's the same thing how we run our union elections in schools, the way the school board runs its operations. It happens all the time this way.
I want to say something to
Marissa's point. Let me just get to the phone. Let you come right back. 410-319-8888. Let me go. Who's been holding on the longest here? I'll let you race. You're a guest. Let's go to Tracy. You're on the air. No, Tracy's already been on. Let's go to Eloise. You're on the air. Sorry.
Good morning.
Good morning, Eloise.
I just want to say a few things. I just want to say, first of all, I do not agree that we need police officers in the public school system. And then of the next thing, that we wasn't informed so we could get there and express ourselves, the parents, grandparents, and great-parents, which I am. And all my children came out of public schools right here in this city. And this is upholds. We have things the children should need in school. Nurses, psychiatrists, things like that. That money they're going to give to police to have wear guns, that's what they need to do. Put that money aside for things like that. To help children.
And they are already here. All of those resources are already available to students.
And I'll let you respond right now, because Melissa also said...
You might want to check some of the school budgets. That's not quite true.
That's true.
They are available. They are available.
Yeah, but it costs money.
It costs
so they're
a lot of
not,
money.
So it's not
Well, I want to say there was...
Ask the question, why do mentors need guns? Can Sergeant Boatwright and other officer not mentor without firearms? Go ahead.
We're police officers as well as being mentors. Okay? That's our occupation. We're police. Let me say, there was a public hearing that was held at 5 o'clock in the evening. And parents spoke, students spoke, members of Baltimore School Police, our president spoke. But I need to say something to Race that's very important, because he continues to talk about there is no proof that police officers in schools have an impact or on the prevention. Listen, we can't measure. When we go to our office and there's a note slid under the door that's telling us that something's going to happen up the street after school, and we abate that situation, we can't measure those times where someone comes into the office and says, so-and-so has continued to bother me. I'm thinking about bringing a knife to school to do X, Y, and Z. Can you get involved in this situation? Okay. So when you start talking about measures and measuring, there's so many things that we do in our job that just simply cannot be measured with the data and the stats that you're presenting, Race. And when you're in the schools, and Ms. Moffitt, you have some very excellent points, and we invite you to come in. See, in the city, they call it a ride-along. Come on inside the schools and walk along, and come do it as often and as many times as
Absolutely.
You want.
But more important than that, parents should be involved in this decision from the beginning. They have not been involved.
Well, I mean, that's not
an attack on school police.
Right.
That's an attack on the process.
Right. And members of the school board have acknowledged the deficiency of getting parents involved, parental involvement.
Well, they need to do something more than acknowledge it, though.
Well, I mean, they've acknowledged. Right. But I'm not here to speak for the Baltimore City school board. Right.
I know you're not.
Right.
I know you're not.
And I just want to say, we're getting away from saying that we're militarizing our schools, that we're over-policing our kids. That's not the issue at hand, because that's not what we do. We reach out to our students on a daily basis and have these direct conversations. At times, when I was assigned to a high school, I was the first person that a child saw that spoke to them that day. And those relationships are still there to this day. These people are adults.
We're almost out of time, so I'm going to ask you all to have some final thoughts here. And I would just say, as you make these final thoughts, is I'd be much more comfortable with any of this conversation if we didn't play the game where, like, the officers were caught in that video beating those young kids in Baltimore City schools, it was 5 months later and there's still no resolution?
Well, I mean,
I don't want to hear about investigations going on.
That's the criminal process. I mean, that's the process of a criminal investigation.
That's why they're trying to change the police Bill of Rights now, because the process is the police are not held accountable when these things happen. Then they should.
Well, the Bill of Rights is a whole other issue, and I would like to come back and talk to you about the Bill of Rights.
People like you look bad when it doesn't have to.
That's right.
Well, I would like to come talk to you about the Bill of Rights, but that's a total separate issue.
It is.
Mark, the assailant who shot is the Chris Kyle. In the movie American Sniper. He was just found guilty on yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
He got due process. It took 2 years, but nobody is saying that he wasn't given an opportunity or the family wasn't given an opportunity to due process.
You can't compare the two.
No, what we're talking about is the judicial system, because when you ask why hasn't a person already had a sanction imposed through the courts, we can't answer that question.
It hasn't even got to the courts.
Well, listen, Mark.
There's
a process, but you can't say that it hasn't gotten to the courts. You can't say that.
I know it hasn't gotten to the courts.
You may say it hasn't been heard. The case hasn't been heard, but you can't say it hasn't reached the courts.
It hasn't reached the courts.
Well,
if it had, there'd be a trial and public would know what was going on.
Well, we're not going to talk about that anymore. Right.
But anyway, this has been a great discussion.
So did we get a closing comment?
We have can we get a minute? Mm-hmm. We have a quick minute for everybody to close off. Literally a quick minute. Start with the sergeant.
All right. I want to highlight what our officers do. You know, we have GEMS, that's a Girls Expecting More Success program that's run out of Digital Harbor High School, that's run by and founded by a police officer, Betty Covington. You know, we have officers that teach great every day. We have officers who have had students come to them and admit crimes to them because they felt that comfort of a school police officer is going to take care of me. Our officers are not animals. Our officers are the ones that our children lean on, and that our principals say that they support us, and our teachers say that they support us. Our officers are a very professional organization.
We're really running completely out of time here because we have another segment. Race, the final thought from you, we're going to have to wrap this up. Race?
So the final thought is that Baltimore City Public Schools have a pretty serious problem about over-disciplining and over-criminalizing student behavior. One of your previous guests, Jenny Egan, wrote about this and spoke about this very eloquently. Adding guns to the situation just further normalizes and further entrenches the policing environment in Baltimore City schools that is having a demonstrably negative effect on students. So rather than introducing guns, let's look to finding other solutions to this problem.
Very quick, Donovan. I mean, like literally 30 seconds or less.
I'm going to ask the listeners and the audience to please support our bills on both the House and the Senate side. I encourage you to call your state delegates and your senators in support of protecting. This is not a us against them. We're asking for your support.
Correct.
And I'll end just by responding to Sergeant Boatwright about the mentoring program at Digital Harbor High. It was also the Digital Harbor High School SGA president who spoke before the forum on Tuesday, who was very clear in saying, in terms of how we're talking about safety that's happening in other counties that need to happen here, his point was the same education needs to happen in Baltimore City like those other counties. And that's where the focus
And he had was. He had five of his classmates that were sitting in a row that would have said that was
And that we have to really end here, but this is you just heard Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, who's starting a charter school here in Baltimore City, and, of course, American Studies professor at University of Maryland, Baltimore County, Race Akbar, Juvenile Justice Coordinator for Advocates of Children and Youth, Sergeant Clyde Boatwright, President of the Baltimore City School Police Union, Lodge Number 5, and Donovan Brooks, who is the school supervisor with the Baltimore City School Police. Great to have the four of you. It was a great discussion.
Thank you.
I appreciate everything everybody does
here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Moffitt.
We'll be right back. Don't go away. We're going to jump into pain medications.
Jesus, someone to hear your prayers, someone who cares.